Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer, and back from assignment.
All right. Fred, I'm so thrilled that you're back because I think we might have had a prediction that's coming true a little bit.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Boy, I can't wait to talk about it. But hey, yeah. That show last week when I was on assignment,
yeah,
there was this Dreadnoughtus.
Yes.
That was awesome.
That enormous dinosaur that dwarfs a T-Rex. A T-Rex is what, 8 tons? This is 65 tons.
65 tons. That's 8 times bigger than a T-Rex.
It's way bigger than a Boeing 737 as far as tonnage. That's like 50 tons. The 65 tons.
Yeah.
Fred, and it's got to be the animal that God was talking about in the book of Job, chapter 40, Behemoth.
Behemoth, yep.
Because that dinosaur, it's the largest of God's land-dwelling creatures. And it is a vegetarian.
It's a vegetarian, that's right.
Because it eats grass, God says, and the other beasts of the field, they play around it. They're not afraid of it.
They're not afraid of it.
And wow.
I wonder if Mary Schweitzer is afraid of it, because I hear she's looking into it.
You know, that was sort of a prediction that I made, not knowing she was involved with this research, that they're going to find soft tissue in Dreadnoughtus, most likely.
Yeah, most likely. We'd expect it at this point, right?
And so she is?
It turns out she's looking into it. That's kind of breaking news.
I'm thrilled to hear that because she is the Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
She is. She's the world's most famous scientist published regarding the discovery of soft tissue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even decomposed DNA from a hadrosaur and a T-Rex.
Yeah, they've actually gotten DNA out now.
Yeah, so this is all so fun. So that's a pending prediction. We'll see if it turns out to be true in that single dinosaur's skeleton and its fossils, whether or not they'll find soft tissue. My guess is they will because they're finding it everywhere they look.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere they look. And I bet you they find C14 in it, too, if they wanted to try to do that.
She won't look, right?
Oh, yeah, they won't look. They don't want to find it.
Come on, Mary Schweitzer, please look for carbon-14 in it. And you know what else I don't think they'll look for, Fred? They won't look for left-handed amino acids.
And why is that?
Well, because when an organism dies, all the protein acids, all the amino acids in our protein molecules are left-handed.
They're all configured in a left-handed
manner. None of them are right-handed.
That's right.
And outside of life, everything is 50-50 by physics. If you have amino acid molecules, half are left-handed, half are right-handed.
So when something dies, they start to racemize. Right?
Back to a 50-50.
Yeah, so slowly back to 50-50.
Yeah.
A lot of it's still left-handed. That's kind of like a clock, right?
Yes.
Depending on how much it's randomized, kind of gives an idea of how long that thing's been dead. The problem is they find way too many left-handed amino acids.
If this thing was 80 million years old. Dinosaur eggshells, they found too much left-handedness. And so we know why, because they're only thousands of years old.
Yeah, they're not 80 million years old.
Right, exactly.
That's a really slowly decaying left-handed amino acids into a mixture.
Yeah.
There's no way.
So soft tissue, DNA, and all this wonderful stuff. Carbon-14 in these dinosaur bones. Well, Fred, here's the prediction we made back in February. This is one of our many predictions in our list of creationist predictions.
Just this last February 2014.
Yes. So we said that by 2020, just to put a date on it, powerful and less disputed evidence of biological matter scattered in the solar system will be added to the currently existing evidence that it's out there.
Yeah.
So that was in February. And so what do they find this summer as they're cleaning the windows of the Sears Tower? No.
Yeah. Nautilus submarine?
No, the International Space Station. They're cleaning the windows.
Yeah. There's sea plankton on there. So, hey.
There's plankton?
Sea plankton.
Outside on the surface of the space station?
So is this thing like a nautilus and then it flies into space? You know, you see that in science fiction.
Yeah.
This thing has sea plankton on it.
This is...
Wow.
This is fun. And the reason we expect to find sea plankton up in space is because when the fountains of the great deep erupted, that is the source of these mavericks of the solar system, these deadly meteoroids, and then there's asteroids and comets.
Mm-hmm.
They were not part of God's original creation. For one, they're dangerous.
Yeah.
They kill people when something happens to hit the Earth. So
the fountains of the great deep is the Oort cloud.
Yeah, that's right. Wow, I never thought of it that way.
The Oort cloud does exist. Well, it doesn't anymore. It used to exist, you know, underneath the surface of the Earth.
Yeah.
That's the Oort cloud.
So the fountains of the great deep launched all this debris in the solar system. Dr. Walt Brown, the author of the hydroplate theory, he and I just did a show on the trans-Neptunian objects, which means that if he's correct, we know the source of those objects also out past Neptune, that they're all a result of the fountains of the great deep. So when you subtract all that from our solar system, what you have then is this pristine, clean, perfectly designed solar system, which is what we'd expect from God. But it's because of man's sin that everything went haywire.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And hey, I don't know if this is one of our predictions. I wonder if they'll find C14.
Carbon-14.
I mean, that would make sense, right?
Whoa, Fred. We need to add a C14 prediction to the biological matter that they find
in outer space. They think these asteroids and comets, that they're millions of years old.
They think it's all millions, millions
of years old. So this sea plankton, somehow it's millions of years old.
Right.
I wonder how they're going to explain where sea plankton, why it's up there.
Well, why don't we do this? You know, I think we should list different examples, the evidence that there's biological matter in space. You know, just like the scientific community was in denial over dinosaur soft tissue, but now they admit that it's there. Well, in the same way, not only is the evolution community in denial about the biological matter in our solar system, that there very well may be a lot of it, but the creation movement is in denial over it too, because the large groups, we love them dearly. I mean, we truly do. You just went to visit the Creation Museum this summer.
Creation Museum.
Yeah, I've been there a few
times. Kentucky, Cincinnati, Ohio. You know, it's right on the border there.
Yeah.
So.
I just love Ken Ham's work and the Creation Museum.
Oh, that museum. Fantastic.
And CMI out of Australia and their Creation Magazine and CRS and ICR, Henry Morris. We love those guys, but they disagree with Dr. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory that God put the water for the flood under the crust of the earth when he made the earth.
Yeah.
And the fountains of the great deep, that's when that water came up and flooded the earth. So because they disagree with that, they don't expect to find biological matter in space. So it's not only the secular scientific community that I think is in denial over this evidence, but I think it's also the creation community.
Yeah. Interesting.
Outside of the hydroplate supporters. So the list.
The good news is they're much more likely to come around than the secular community, for sure.
Right? So what do we begin with? What evidence is there that there might be biological material out in space?
Of course, there's Fred Hoyle. He's very well known among evolutionists, atheists, real famous guy.
Yeah.
And he's known for heavy elements from the stars, right?
Oh, the stellar nucleosynthesis that, since the Big Bang could only form hydrogen and helium, where did everything else come from? So he came up with the idea, well, stars are like factories and they make all the heavy elements. Now they're finding out that even supernovas can't make the heavy elements.
Yep. That's becoming disproven.
Yeah. But anyway, what was his deal? Oh, he reported in the journal Nature that they find the signature of cellulose when they look at light from outer space. This was quite a find. In fact, we'll put this in our show summary for today's show. Here's a quote from Fred Hoyle and also Chandra Wickramasinghe from India. Here's what they had published in the journal Nature. Quote, "The presence of interstellar polysaccharides," basically that's like carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
No, get that? Interstellar carbohydrates.
Huh?
I thought carbohydrates are something you avoid when you're fat. I've been avoiding them. Fred, I've been doing a low-carb diet. I've lost 55.
It's working great for you.
Right? Yeah. For me, not for everybody, but 55 pounds I lost since January. I'm so thankful to the Lord. And so anyway, they write that the presence of carbohydrates in space has been deduced by comparing their light, their spectra, with calculations based on cellulose. So they write, we show that the transmittance properties of cellulose gives a good agreement to the observed emission from outer space.
Sounds like biological material to me.
Isn't that cool? So when you shine light through cellulose, which are carbohydrates that grow mostly in green plants, then the light gives off a certain emission spectra, a pattern. And so they say when we do that in the lab and we see what it looks like, they use cellulose from cotton. We see what it looks like. They said we get the same kind of pattern when we look out in space. So they think that there's cellulose out there. What's their conclusion from that? If, in fact, there is cellulose, what does Fred Hoyle make of it?
Well, he's like panspermia, right? He thinks life came from outer space.
Right. So he is drawing an incorrect conclusion.
Yeah. His secular worldview leads him in that direction instead of, you know,
a biblical worldview. So here we have all this life on Earth. And if you find a meteorite with bacteria in it.
Had to come from somewhere else.
Had to come from Mars, which is dead, dry, barren, no life, no seas, you know, couldn't come from Earth. They say that all the time. Like Mars, they say, well, maybe there was a global flood on Mars. That's NASA. Yeah. NASA. Yeah. I mean, there's a global. Mars has no liquid
no
water.
No water on it.
Earth.
And
is,
they'll deny that there's a global flood on Earth, and two-thirds of it, roughly, is covered by water.
Covered by water. That's like, a mile deep. It's hysterical.
Well, hey, anyway, we were talking about left-handed amino acids earlier, and guess what?
Yes.
So left-handed amino acids, they found those in meteorites.
They sure do. In fact, Canada has their Tagish Lake meteorites, and they were examined very carefully. And what they found in these meteorites, and I could quote from New Scientist, excesses of left-handed acids, specifically from two amino acids that are common in life on Earth.
In life on Earth, yeah.
That is just so fun, Fred, because that's what we expect when the debris that's flying around our solar system, if it came from the Earth, we should find markers of life from Earth.
From Earth, exactly. And that's what we find.
Yeah. And so, of course, what must the atheists say? They say, oh, no wonder life on Earth is left-handed. Because
it came from space.
It came from space. So, you know, there's one thing, even with doctrine, as we study the Bible, if somebody has a false doctrine and they read a verse and they twist that verse and the twist supports their doctrine, like let's say the Mormons or the Jehovah's Witnesses. Well, the Bible is such a cohesive message that it turns out that that twist sort of could spiral through the whole Bible and they could find that false impression elsewhere when they look up the same topic. And so if you have a bad worldview and you interpret things backwards, well, then instead of finding the evidence that life on Earth has gone out into space, you interpret it backwards.
Backwards.
And you could just always
spirals
do it
out of control.
Yeah. You could always do it backwards.
Yep.
That's what they do. So now we have more. It turns out that this one is shocking to a lot of people. If you follow science news, it's not shocking. People have heard about this, but for people who have not heard about it, it's shocking.
Bacterial remnants in meteorites and even dormant bacteria.
No, cannot be true, Conrad.
Yeah, bacteria.
It just can't be true.
But it's dormant, okay? So, hey, it's not alive, so.
Okay, so I am looking at a paper here that was published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal called Earth and Planetary Science Letters. And this was in 2000, recent. And here's the title, Bacteria in the Tatooine Meteorite, Nanometric Scale Life in Rocks. And so they present their evidence that they think they have found bacteria in a meteorite.
Yeah. And so again, life from outer space.
Life from outer space.
It won't be long before Richard Dawkins has become enamored with this because Darwinism has just fallen by the wayside.
Right.
And panspermia. So as the world gets disillusioned with Darwinism, you know, like Richard Dawkins in that movie Expelled, remember that?
Ben Stein. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could kind of sense it there because he even in that movie said that appealed to panspermia as a possibility.
Right.
You hadn't heard that before from him. So he's appealing to life from outer space because the evidence for evolution is so overwhelming now.
Right.
It's amazing.
And then the origin of life, biogenesis, forget that. That's just absolutely absurd. It is not possible that they will come up with even a barely plausible theory of how life originated. It's never going to happen. And so, yeah, they're going to point to stuff like this, like bacteria, which they're going to find more and more, even dormant bacteria here, dormant. And they're going to say, well, you know what? It looks like life came from outer space. That's what they're going to say. If our prediction holds true, that by 2020, there's going to be a lot more evidence, then for sure they're going to be saying, that's it. We figured it out.
Yeah, life came from space.
And all they're doing is punting, right?
Yeah, they're punting the problem up in space and back in time.
Yeah, they're just punting because if it couldn't evolve here, why could it evolve there?
Yeah.
And you're only going to get like three times more time. If the Big Bang happened 14 billion years ago, Earth is 4.5 billion years old, so big deal. You get a little more time. It's not going to happen.
So here's another one. A microbiology professor at the University of Sheffield, he collected a diatom in the lower stratosphere during a meteor shower.
Oh, this is exciting. The Perseid meteor shower, they thought, let's send up a high-altitude balloon with a device rigged on it to just capture samples of whatever debris we might get from this meteorite shower. Let's see what we might get.
Yeah, and they got a diatom. What's a diatom?
Single-celled algae, and they have these amazing structures that they build. They're just astounding, Fred. When you look at a diatom algae, I think the most common type is phytoplankton. And Fred, the shapes are astounding.
Oh, they're amazing.
Geometrical
Absolutely.
Shapes that blow your mind. How cool of a designer God is.
Yeah.
It's so fun to see. And so here they find in the lower stratosphere, during a meteorite shower, they come up with a diatom.
During a meteor shower. Interesting.
I absolutely love it. And then there's another report. And this, again, is from the journal Nature, the world's most prestigious journal in 2010. Fred, they were looking at an asteroid called 24 Themis. The light had the signature of organic material, long-chained organic material. So what are these things doing forming out in life? Well, Walt Brown's theory is that comets form from the debris that was ejected from Earth in the fountains of the Great Deep, and large rocks had a growing sphere of influence, their gravity, as they got further and further away from the Earth, and all the smaller rocks and water and dust and debris and bacteria and diatoms and everything else that happened to be ejected with it began to coalesce into it.
Kind of like a dirty snow cone, kind of, right?
Yes, very much so. A comet.
Yep.
A dirty snowball. And so is it surprising that the journal Nature publishes a paper saying, hey, we think there's a signature of organic molecules in,
you know, if this wasn't
comet.
True and if, you know, there wasn't the fountains of the Great Deep pouring this stuff into space.
Yeah.
You know, we would maybe have a couple of these, you know, because anything can be contaminated. Mm-hmm. But there's too many of this. You know, a lot of evolutionist scientists, again, they don't mind this because they're going to be jumping on the panspermia bandwagon.
Right. Eventually. They might come along sooner than the creation
scientists. Yeah, exactly.
Because for answers in Genesis to look at this and say, you know what, looks like there's a lot of biological material in the solar system, that's like saying Walt Brown is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's hard to do when you've been opposing
his view
for 30
years. How are you going
to
account for that as a creationist? You know, there's not a lot of ways. Ooh, I can't think of any.
As a creationist.
How can you account for all that biological material?
If it didn't come from the catastrophe of the global flood. Wow. So then in
Because they don't want to say, you know, us as creationists don't want to say that God created like supernovas blowing up just to, why did God put all that out there?
All that biological material.
At one time, creationists used dinosaur fossils as an excuse. As, you know, God just planted all the fossils.
Right. Oh, I know why. To make people think Walt Brown's theory is right. So, of course, it would. If it turns out that our prediction comes true and there's powerful and less disputed evidence of biological matter scattered through our solar system, well, then the creationists are going to be compelled toward Walt's hydroplate theory. And the atheists are going to be compelled toward panspermia.
Yeah.
For the most part. Although atheists could acknowledge that meteorites from Earth have made it out into space, but they just don't fathom this massive quantity of all the comets, all the asteroids, all the meteoroids, and all the TNOs, the trans-Neptunian objects, all the impacts on the moon.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is we used to believe that, you know, most creationists believe the canopy theory. In fact, it's still around. You know, some creationists who are just getting involved in the movement, they'll bring that up. They still think, they'll say, hey, what about that canopy theory? And there's still some people that don't know that it's generally been refuted. There's a few, you know, hangers on.
The creation groups don't support it.
They don't support it. And what's interesting is Walt Brown, you know, was really the, I'd say the pioneer in finding evidence against it.
Right. And publicly saying there was no vapor canopy.
And as you document very eloquently in your DVD, Bob, your two DVD set, The Global Flood and the Hydroplate Theory.
Thank you, Fred.
You do a really good job of showing the history behind the canopy theory and how it kind of maybe in a little bit plays into politics of, you know, why some creation groups don't necessarily believe, you know, in the hydroplate theory.
You know, when Walt Brown was here in the studio, Fred, just a week ago or so, we did the show on TNOs. He was chuckling about that photo of you and me as cavemen that appears in the video. But what a fun video it is, too. And we go through not only the science and not only what the Bible says about creation and flood model, but we also get into the relationships in the history of the movement and the politics.
Yeah, like a little bit of some intrigue in there.
Yeah.
It's great. Highly recommend it.
Oh,
I bet you we have it in our store.
And we do, Fred. And you know, it's $50, but introductory price of $39.99 because one of our viewers has subsidized every purchase.
Every single
purchase. $10 discount because he loved it so much. What an honor that was.
Yeah, three-part series. It's very well illustrated. Great slides and lots of good video presentations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, animation's really fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, the next comes from Sri Lanka. And this is great. You know, it's like where there's smoke, there's fire. For each of these examples we're giving of biological matter in space, evidence of it, for each one, people find a way to dismiss it and say, oh, they don't know what they're looking at. Oh, you know, whatever. But when you add them all up, there's so many.
There's too many.
It's beginning to look like a pattern.
Yep.
And so this is from meteorites that landed in Sri Lanka just recently. They broke them open and lo and behold, found inside of them diatoms.
Yep, the algae.
So what happens? You've got the mainstream science press trying to dismiss this, and they're saying, well, these are just terrestrial rocks, and the eyewitnesses who said they saw these rocks coming down from space, I even heard a creation scientist, an astronomer, utterly dismissing this as irrelevant and unreliable. He said, you know, the eyewitnesses, you can't trust them, and these are not meteorites. They got diatoms in them, multiple and amazing diatoms. So they must simply be earth rocks that ignorant people mistook as meteorites. Well, the scientists who have researched these, they tested the isotopes because rocks that come from space have different percentages of the different versions of elements as rocks on the surface of the earth. And even NASA stated, I read this, I checked it out, NASA said that the results of those isotope tests on these Sri Lankan rocks are suggestive that they're meteorites.
Suggestive.
Suggestive. They don't want to say they are because if they do, then there's diatoms.
Yeah, they got to add that softening word, you know, suggestive.
Right. Suggestive. So
in the lab, they're like, wow, this came from a meteorite. So then they write their press report. This is suggestive.
suggestive, but it must not be because they had diatoms in them. And you know what's interesting about these diatoms? One photo, it's so elongated. I mean, clearly they have clear textbook diatoms, but one is so elongated, much longer than could grow on Earth. And so inside some of these rocks, they were hot when they were launched. There's liquid water. We know all kinds of stuff happened in asteroids in space after they were launched.
Like an incubator? Is that what you're saying?
Like an incubator.
Okay.
Chondrules that develop in asteroids that simply have no explanation on Earth, yet they need warmth and liquid water and all this stuff. There's evidence that some of these diatoms continued living after they were ejected, and that's why they could grow in zero gravity in the extraordinary way they grew.
If I came and looked at this evidence and I had no other prior bias and you see all these things that are adding up, I would bet that our prediction would come true. I mean, I wouldn't bet against it.
No.
There's no way.
No.
Because there's too many of these. If there was just a handful and it's speculative and it's silly, there's too much of this.
And Fred, you know what we do? Real Science Radio, our specialty is creating these lists of evidence. And I think we do it as well as anybody, maybe better. And I have not found on the internet a complete list of all these in an easily accessible manner. So I think more and more people are going to learn because of this show we're doing right now that there is a lot of evidence that there's biological matter in the solar system.
And the latest is this sea plankton on the outside of the International Space Station.
And Fred, that's just since we made our prediction in February. That's a partial fulfillment of our prediction that they're going to find more biological material in space. And here comes an astronaut saying, well, I found sea plankton.
Yeah.
And that's just great. And air currents don't get up to 260 miles above the surface of the Earth. Air doesn't function in outer space.
He had a secret aquarium on the space station.
Yeah.
He didn't tell anybody about.
And, you know, contamination, could it be? Sure, an astronaut might have sea plankton on a spacesuit, get launched, and it goes outside and gets stuck to the window. Hey, that's possible. For all these, you need really wild stories for everyone. We're out of time. Fred, what a fun show.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Biological matter in space. Once again, Walt Brown's theory has plenty of evidence pointing to it. We're out of time. Please consider getting our video and helping out Real Science Radio with a donation or subscribe to one of our monthly Bible studies or videos. May God bless you.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.